Welcome back, and joining us now is Don Jeffries, and you can find him on Substack, donaldjeffries.substack.com, but it's also there as iProtest. And before we talk about his book, we did a repeat on Memorial Day. I had this to talk about it, along with some other people's comments about Memorial Day and ongoing wars. I didn't get to that yesterday, but I want to talk about that now and begin with an excellent op-ed piece that Don wrote, Standing Up for Peace on Memorial Day. Thank you for joining us, Donald.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about tell the audience about your take, because I've got it right here in front of me, about your take on Memorial Day and on war in general, and how we, part of the what you've got here is just how we are led along with hero worship. And I've seen this in China as well. When we went to China, I was absolutely amazed to see all the Mao merchandise, the Mao merchandise. It was everywhere. And people were buying it, commemorative stuff. This is a guy who killed more of his own citizens than any other political leader ever in history. Yeah. And they're buying mugs and posters and all this kind of stuff. And we do the same thing here, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, and that's why, my heroes don't fit in on like General Smedley Butler. I mean, he just doesn't, one of the comments on my, Substack piece talking about he was tempted to bring up Smedley Butler at the family gathering on Memorial Day, but I mean it just doesn't fit. If somebody wrote War is a Racket, even John F. Kennedy, I think one of the main reasons JFK, and I write about the Kennedys a lot and how they really, so many people still hate the Kennedys, and I try to point out, look, they're really different than these other Democrats. They don't get this kind of press, and most of it is being bad press, because Kennedy made, I think, the greatest speech any president ever has, and that's the American University Peach Speech in June of 1963. And listen to that speech. I mean, he talked about, he's the first president, and none of our politicians do that. He acknowledged that our enemies at the time, the Soviets, were human beings. Yeah. He talked about them loving their children. And I remember getting arguments with people when they talk about Nazis and stuff, and I said, well, Do you recognize that they're human beings? No. I said, do you reckon that they had families? Maybe they loved their, presumably they loved their children. But that's what happens when you get into this war mentality. You don't acknowledge that your opponents, who are just being manipulated like we are actually human beings that could love and could be good people. Mm-hmm. They're just fighting for what they think is right. And but we're always fighting for something. And I talk about, I don't think it's any accident that I think the greatest woman in American history was Jeanette Rankin. I think she was the first member of Congress. She was one of only a handful who voted against our entrance into World War I. And she was the only person that had the guts to vote against declaring war on the Japanese at Pearl Harbor. And she had to go seek police help, and her career was over after that. And she was like a feminist, a typical leftist, but I quote her in there, and she talks about, war is it's a stupid way of resolving things. Mm-hmm. And we are so enthralled with it still. And you see now the left where I came from, I started out as a classical liberal teenager, and to see the left love war and talk about nuclear option and talk about let's go to war with Russia. This is not Iraq or Afghanistan. It's a country that'll actually fight back.
Yeah.
Yes. And talk about this, this is, it's insanity, but we never seem to get tired of war. And you see Lady Lindsey Graham, recently going, talking about how it's the best money we've ever spent or something on the Ukraine because of dead Russians and everything. It's like, I don't know why. So my piece is just to try to say, does anybody who spoke, Kennedy's peach speech was fear, and Trump's pronouncements here or there, because Trump will once in a while talk about, maybe it's so bad to get along with Russia, but he'll do it in the middle of a 100 counter thing, so he gets lost in the shuffle. But there's nobody really speaking out for peace. He just doesn't. Gerald Celente, our friend Gerald Celente, had an anti-war rally a couple months back, and I don't even know if it drew 100 people.
Yeah,
I mean, just peace is just not popular. War is. You give a parade with the military veterans and the kids love it. Old people love it. Everybody loves to wave those flags, and it's those of us that are trying to counsel peace. It's like, we get called names, and it's just, I don't know. I just think that I think we've been at war for about 90% of our time since we became a country or something like that. People have established.
Yes.
Maybe we're due for a little bit of peace, but it just doesn't seem to be something that most people want.
I agree. And it is, it does ring hollow. We see these politicians laying flowers and saying, thank you for your service while they're planning in the midst of another unnecessary war. And that's the key thing. You point out, you said, I'm not a pacifist, but you said, you talk about people on the left, and I began the program with a poll that was done in Canada. The people who went with the vaccine and all the narrative and believed everything the government told them, they were typically between 80 and 85% of them on all these different questions about what the U.S. should do in terms of continued involvement and escalation in Ukraine. 80 to 85% of them were fully on board, whereas the people who didn't get the vaccine, they were just the opposite. You know, it was typically about 10 to 15% that would agree with those authoritarian proposals. So it was like this 80-20 thing. It has to do with people who buy into the narrative and buy into the story there.
Yeah.
And we see that right now, predominantly on the left. And, I don't want to get into the book just yet. I got another question about you with this stuff. But, when you look at what happened in terms of denying people's humanity, well, we saw that left and right throughout all this COVID stuff as well, didn't we? But when you say, you talk about people on the right, people who say they follow Jesus, the Prince of Peace, and yet they're also about war. What do you think about the just war theory that Augustine put in there?
Well, again, most of us, we think, and I've written extensively about Abraham Lincoln and the war between the states, and that's one of the good wars, supposedly. And the other good war is World War II. And again, it's very emotional. But I wrote a lot. I don't really go into the Holocaust or anything, but I talked very much about the Allied atrocities. Somebody was writing on my, I get lots of comments on my Substack, was talking about Dresden. And, that's, if there is such a thing as a war crime, I can't think of a worse one than Dresden. When we bombed, this is the good guys that did it. I can't remember the statistics. It's something horrible. Something like, we killed something like 38,000 babies.
Yeah.
Or something like that in that bombing. Mm. And it had no military value whatsoever. We just did it. And those people that were later, Bomber Harris, Arthur Harris, Bomber of the Royal Air Force, didn't back down. Decades later, people would question him about it. They're proud that they did it. And when we talk about supporting the troops and thanking you for your service or anything, supporting the troops, we're supporting their agenda. It's not their agenda, what they're sent to do. So you're supporting the people who sent them into battle. You're enabling this mindset. So if you support, what we saw, look, when you have somebody like Bradley Kelty Manning, who's still sitting in prison, as through Julian Assange, who also is in danger of being prosecuted.
Yeah,
we learned some of the horrible things, which really goes back to the Civil War, or even the war with Mexico, even before that. We saw troops doing things in Iraq, like playing soccer with decapitated heads, mm-hmm. Iraqis, and urinating on their corpses, blowing up the wrong house, and lining up kids and killing. I mean, this is unbelievable atrocities, and people, you gloss over that. That kills your humanity. If you're supporting what they did, they're doing this kind. They're not all of them are doing that, obviously, but maybe it's only a fraction. But by putting them in these positions, you're ensuring that those kinds of things happens, because they don't. I mean, go back to the My Lai massacre in Vietnam and Operation Phoenix, where we had a program of assassinating people in Vietnam. Nobody talks about these things. These are not. It's not like the War of 1812, when Britain came to the shores and attacked the White House. Okay, well, I can say we have to fight that war.
That's really what the just war is really about. So yes, a justified war is in self-defense. If somebody comes in like the British did,
yes,
and they've attacked, you defend yourself. You take certain actions to make sure that you try to, as much as possible, distinguish between combatants and non-combatants, and
yes,
not have what we've cynically called collateral damage. And then the object of it is to cease hostilities as soon as possible. And that's why I said earlier, I said, there is no justification in this war in Ukraine. Forget about arguing who fired the first shot. Talk about the fact that they're not looking to end it. That's the key thing, that they don't want peace under any circumstances. That's the real tell. You're talking about the bombing of Dresden and things like that. Robert McNamara was trying to, in the Fog of War documentary where he's talking about that, he was trying to excuse himself from the false flag that started the Vietnam War. He admitted it was a false flag. He tried to excuse himself from the false flag, tried to excuse himself from this phony justification of a domino theory, which he admitted was a lie, and to excuse the fact that they just used people as cannon fodder to test their weapons. He said, well, you know, if we had lost World War I, we would have been tried as war criminals because of the bombings of Dresden and other places like that. Yes. He admitted it. Let's talk a little bit about your book here, Masking the Truth. Is it out yet? You sent me a preview.
Yes, it's out, and but it's what we're doing is this is a different publisher. I have a small publisher, Midnight Writer News Press, and we are holding it back a couple weeks from Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everything because if people buy it through the publisher, and if you go to my Substack, I have the link there, and it's through Lulu, but if you go to that link, people ask me all the time, where can I buy your book and you'll get a bigger percentage? Because, you know, writers notoriously get very small royalty rates. So, you know, the people that produce works, like in anything, whether it's music or whatever, get a very small percentage of it. And that definitely is the first and foremost with writers. So in this case, if you buy it there, I will get a larger cut. You won't pay any more for the book, but I'll get a percentage of it. So we're asking, lots of people have already said they bought it. So it'll be up on Amazon and everywhere else within a week or two, but right now you can go there. And if you look at, and if you don't follow me, please follow me, subscribe to me on Substack, and I'll, the link is there on my last article about the book.
Okay. And you're on Substack as Donald Jeffrey, not Don Jeffries. And they can also find it as I Protest there.
Right,
I think it's very important for us to go back and to look at what happened. And we're starting to see that in a lot of different quarters. The subtitle of your book is How COVID-19 Destroyed Civil Liberties and Shut Down the World. And that was what Neil Gorsuch was talking about as well. And so it's good that we go back and we look at this from a civil liberties perspective, from an economics perspective, from a medical perspective, from a constitutional perspective. And I think it's important for us to know all the different tells that alerted many of us from the very beginning of this thing, that this was a fraud. What was it that you picked up on from the very beginning that this was a sham?
Well, it was the very beginning. I think it was one of the first. I didn't swallow it for a second. Well, you know, I'm familiar with the fear porn thing, where they're constantly trying to keep the earth, you know, it's whether it's an asteroid's going to come close to the earth or, you know, there's always something out there to hang over people's heads where this could happen, you know. And I remember Ebola and monkeypox and kind of hearing that in the background, but it was nothing like this. But when they started claiming there were videos of the people in China dropping dead in the streets, and then in particular, that video of the woman who was nonsensically walking around and spitting on doorknobs and candles. Then they claimed they were nailing people, you know, into their houses when you had, you know, a window like right next to the nailed door. Mm-hmm. They could have, you know, broke the window if they absolutely had. I mean, just, I said, you know, this is really overkill. And then when they quarantined an entire country, Italy, I don't think that had ever happened before. I was obviously dubious, and then I just started researching it. I thought maybe, you know, I might write a book about this. I didn't know where it was going. But, you know, when they early on showed that they just kind of quietly, after, you know, putting this fear porn in people about, and first in China, when China eventually admitted, I have all this in the book, it's all documented, where Chinese media admitted, well, you know, we did include cases of pneumonia and the flu with these
numbers. Yeah. And then, in the U.S., all the flu just went away, you know?
The flu just disappeared. Yeah, because I was being mercilessly, my social media presence grew on Facebook before the shadow ban, but so people were responding to my posts, and I was, before Substack, I was writing there all the time. Now I can't because nobody sees it, but that's what I write about this. But people were canceling me too, calling me dangerous. Oh, yeah. And I was basically taunted constantly with, I still think it's just the flu. And then so when fall of 2020 came around, that's what I was posting. Well, I guess it was just the flu. The flu's not here anymore. It completely disappeared. So what are you supposed to, in Italy, they were saying thousands and thousands of people are dying. It's coming soon to a neighborhood near you. And thousands and thousands of people. And then quietly, again, Italian media reported, well, you know, 99% of these people were elderly and they died of other causes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a lie from the beginning. And that's what I think differentiates my book from Naomi's book, Naomi Wolf's book, The Bodies of Others. And Naomi wrote a nice blurb for this book. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s The Real Fauci. These are all valuable books. Peter McCullough's book, Alex Berenson's book. But none of them I go down to the bottom of the rabbit holes, and I go right from the very beginning. I was dubious of this thing, and my thesis is that I think the evidence demonstrates that COVID-19, first of all, it's the 2019 version of the yearly coronavirus, that's what they call it. So like when I say many times, where's COVID-20? Where's COVID-21? Where's COVID-22? What happened to them?
Yeah.
This destroys viral theory. So they admit, the CDC, the FDA, not a conspiracy theory. They tell you that they can't produce an isolate COVID-19. If they've isolated, they can't document it. Mm-hmm. It means they haven't proven it existed. So show me what this is. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that COVID-19 is, as the FDA said when they were developing the PCR vaccine. I've got the quotes in the book there. There were no isolates were available. Yep. So they simulated COVID-19 by using fragments of the regular coronavirus, which of course is what it is, mm-hmm. the common cold. Mm-hmm. People from the very beginning, and I saw it in my family and friends, I saw it everywhere, there's nonstop fear porn, and anybody that got a cold or got sick, I mean, these so-called symptoms of COVID are identical to a cold or flu. I mean, what do you have? A sore throat, congestion in your head, congestion in your chest, coughing. Sometimes you do lose your sense of taste. That was with cold.
Yeah.
Acting like this was something different. So, people were frightened. And then what I said, David, many times, I ended up losing my brother. That's when it became personal for me. But mm-hmm. there's all these people that I would like to know how many people died of COVID, so-called COVID, without being in a hospital.
That's right.
How many of these people died at home? I don't think very many at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it was financially incentivized medical malpractice and financially incentivized by Trump, actually, is what happened with it.
Yes.
And you look at it, as you point out, it's the fear porn. You began with your first chapter with a quote from RFK Jr., who says the CDC is not a government agency, is a vaccine marketer or seller or something like that. And that was always the case. And they had played this game. To me, it was pretty obvious from the very beginning because they were playing the same game they did every year to try to harangue people into getting the flu shot. And yet the fear was being sold by everybody, not just the mainstream media. It's being sold by the alternative media. It's being sold by the people I worked with who knew this campaign, who knew about the fact that they would use this fear campaign to get people to take the flu vaccine. And I remember Mike Adams, saying, look at this. Yes. And he's put up the CDC figures and he said, look, more people are dying now from COVID-19 than from heart disease and cancer. And it's like, seriously? You're going to put that up as if it's true? What's going on with the PCR test. I mean, Kerry Mullins, they waited until after he died or killed him or whatever to run this thing because he had opposed all this misuse of the PCR from the very beginning with HIV with Fauci.
And he died very conveniently, didn't he? Right.
Yeah.
At a very convenient moment.
That's right.
And I talk again about the history of this. This is not, when you have, and it's very much like when people talk about Sandy Hook or any of those other things that I point out, they do these school drills constantly. They have these drills with crisis actors and fake blood and all that. That's what your taxes pay for. So they're doing this kind of crazy stuff. So it's a logical leap to question the supposed relevance. Same thing here. It started out with a drill. Mm-hmm. The dark winter, I know you've talked about that. Winter of, in 2001, all the usual suspects are there, tabletop exercise. What if a pandemic, a deadly virus comes out of China? It's always out of China. Mm-hmm. And how do we develop a vaccine for it? And then they had six or seven other ones, and I've got the whole, progression of them in the book. Mm-hmm. And they're always the same suspect, World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, WHO, retired politicians playing actors in it to what we're going to do with it. And it's no
CIA, Fauci, Johns Hopkins, all.
Yeah, exactly. They're all
suspects that need to be into a lineup, which is
exactly.
See, that's my thing about it. And that's why it's important for us to take a look at the history of all this and to understand what happened, because I don't see anybody, the people who pushed this through. They're still heroes, just like Mao, right? I guess we'll always be celebrating Donald Trump, who did this COVID war to us, just like the Chinese celebrate Mao.
Well, I put the four people on the cover. I call them the Mount Rushmore of COVID because they were the face of COVID. Mm-hmm. Trump, Biden, Fauci, and Gates. I mean, it's a lot more than that, but those individuals are front and center.
Yeah.
Constantly selling this thing. But if you look how deep this goes, David, it's like we know how many people know that dark winter exercise, tabletop exercises, precipitated this. That was the first drill talking about what was going to happen. So was it an accident that Joe Biden doddering around started babbling about dark winter during his first winter in office?
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be a dark winter. I mean, why did he use that expression?
That's right.
That interesting. I mean, it's, you know, obviously he was told to, and then I think they do these things so people like us, people that are aware of it and awake of it, it's for our entertainment, I think. I don't know why else they would do it, but, you know, why would he say darker? But they do this kind of stuff all the time. And it's the last one, of course, was Agenda 201, which was, I think, in October of 2019. And that was, you know, the final preparations, I guess, for the dress rehearsal or whatever for it. And then right after that, it happens. And then you start hearing, you know, I've heard going back to the Hong Kong flu, you know, in the 1960s, where they would put these things out there and you'd kind of, maybe as a kid, you're maybe a little scared or something, but nothing ever happens. Ebola, we know Ebola has a deadly, much deadlier infection rate than whatever this supposedly had, but there was, nothing was ever closed down. The flu has killed as many as 80,000 people a year. Nothing was ever
closed down. You had in Dallas, you know, where they had that illegal immigrant come in with Ebola. Yeah. And you had a couple of nurses almost die with that, but they survived. And the guy who got it died. But you had Clay Jenkins, who was the highest elected official there in the Dallas County. I don't know if they call it Dallas County. Anyway, he was the mayor of that area, a judge rather, is what they call it there in Texas. Clay Jenkins, and he went there and he drove the family to another place and said, "See, there's nothing to worry about. All of you go to the football game this weekend. We got lots of doctors and nurses and lots of hospitals. Yeah. This is nothing to be worried about." And yet this is the guy who destroyed Shelley Luther, who had a hair salon because she defied his order. He wanted to put her in jail. Besides destroying her business, the single mom who had the audacity to say, "Well, I'm going to cut hair and take my chances. That's my right to do that." All these people who talk about women's rights and their right to choose and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And the first question out of our mouth ought to be, "So what did you say about the masks and the lockdowns and the social distancing? Were you about individual choice at that point in time?"
Exactly. And you mentioned, you know, a little bit, just touched on immigration. And that, to me, that was, and I tried to point that early on. I said it in so many of my posts. Is the southern border still open? And this, again, this started when Donald Trump was president. He talked so much about closing the border, doing things he never did, of course. But here he had a perfect cover. I don't even think that anybody could have, logically have opposed him. If you said, if you have a real pandemic, if this is really a deadly disease, another black plague, which they were trying to portray it as, the first thing any country, no matter how corrupt they are, the first thing they would do is seal the borders.
That's right.
And ban international travel. Nothing that didn't happen. The border stayed wide open, business as usual, politics as usual. And it got to the point where during the Biden administration, I'm sure you saw that press conference where Steve Mnuchin asked his press secretary, why are people being required to have vaccine mandates to keep their jobs? But apparently nobody crossing through the border illegally from Mexico is required to have. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. That was it. So how are we supposed to take this seriously if you're letting people in, you're not vetting them? I mean, they could have leprosy, they could have anything. Nobody knows what they, you're supposed to have a vetting process. They weren't doing that. They never did that. And of course, I recount in the book all this that we've all seen, all the stories where you see Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, John Kerry, the Cuomos, all of them caught out constantly, the biggest Karens in the world, warning against this stuff. You must wear your mask. All caught without their mask. All caught hugging and not so they must not have feared anything.
No, they didn't believe it. And we saw that as it was happening. And then I think the worst and the most egregious one of these things has been Matt Hancock in the UK, who, he was caught having this adulterous liaison while he was locking everybody else down. But now they've gotten his text messages where he and other people in the Conservative Party administration were laughing at people that they were forcing to quarantine in hotels and things like that, mocking them and just rubbing, "Oh, this is great. Look at what I can do to these people." I mean, it was the most cynical, hypocritical power trip I've ever seen in my life to read this guy's texts with other members of the Conservative Party. And that was happening everywhere. We saw it quite a bit in California, but it was happening everywhere in every country. And so that's the other part of this that was a real tell, I think, was the global nature of this.
Yeah, that's why, people, I go on so many shows and, weekly, some of the shows that I'm on weekly, they'll talk about you know, World War III is right there. Something happened to Ukraine, something happened to Russia. It's going to happen. And I always, you know, because I've heard these things before. And again, this is probably a year and a half we've been talking about this. Obviously, it hasn't been precipitated. And I wrote a thing back on Substack a while back saying, World War III is here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I said something like, what if they give a war and nobody knew or something? But and it's a worldwide war, as you touched on. That's the saddest thing about all this, is that there wasn't a single country that dissented from this. They shut down the entire world within about a week. Yeah. They didn't need a single troop. They didn't need a single cop. There's not a shot being fired, as the saying goes. I mean, you had Brazil and other countries that kind of balked a little bit. You had in Africa some countries where they didn't buy the vaccine thing, and those leaders died suspiciously. And I have all that in the book as well. There have been some people that looked like they might have been knocked off because they were completely with the program. But that's the saddest thing. So this is a worldwide thing, and it's a world war of all the governments of the world at war with their own citizens. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing certainly in America when you look at I was watching a thing the other day, a video, amazing video of one of the AOC's, you know, crazy thing. Was and she gets lots of people that get up and shout at her about, you know, why are you supporting the war in Ukraine and everything. And it's like, I don't know how Americans can watch it. And whether it's a school board or a thing like that or whatever, as soon as somebody gets up and shouts something about COVID or war or something that's conspiratorial in their mind, instantly the armed guards comes out, the cops come out. And it's so heavy-handed. And I said, I don't know what it was like in the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany or Mao's China, but I can't imagine it was worse than that. How would have they reacted differently if a protester went up and started yelling at Stalin? Yeah, they would have done this. Well, they might have shot him, maybe. Or maybe we haven't done that yet. But if they did do that, I don't think Americans would protest. That's the saddest thing, is that it's all happened, and people just were so enamored. And we talked about it with Memorial Day at war. Americans, just like the rest of the world, apparently they can't get enough of this authoritarianism.
That's right.
Love it.
That's
right. And they're not fighting back. In this country, we had, I think, one little protest was in Michigan, and they quickly shut it down. Oh, there are guns there. There's Confederate flags, and they demonized the people. And it was not even a big thing. That was it. Mm-hmm. We haven't had another one since. The January 6th thing probably scared a lot of people, because those poor people are still in prison being denied due process, and the ones that have been convicted are being convicted of phony sentences, and no one seems to care.
Yeah.
I think that has kind of killed the protest spirit. But you know, you had Brazil, you had France, you had Germany, you had England. They've had large protests, and it hasn't mattered.
Yeah.
They still, like Australia. Look at Australia. They were, I mean, I talk about it. Yeah, they were going into people's houses and questioning about their Facebook posts. Mm-hmm. And you know, and they're actually, you know, you can't write up. They were like, I remember there was a video of somebody where the cops just come up to the guy, and I think he was in like a shopping mall or something. Says, "Do you have a reason to be here?" They were doing this. I'm like, what
is this? Do you have a reason to ask me? Your identity papers, please. We're the occupying government here. That's what this is about, and it really does. Does head to that. Where do we go from here? That's one of your chapter headings. Where do we go from here, Don?
Well, that's, you know, the reason there were two parts to this book. Well, there's two parts of the first part of the cover up, obviously, is to build up this thing, which I think is imaginary, COVID-19. And I think it was born out of the regular coronavirus, the flu, other ailments, other comorbidities, as they call it. I think they created this COVID-19 monster, lied about the numbers, kept trying to get people to think there were more people dying. Obviously, they weren't dying from this thing. And then the second part was to introduce the warp speed vaccine, and then to lie about the people that were dying and being injured by the vaccine. So it's two parts of that. But as I put in the book, there's no good way to end a book like this. And I started out the book before the vaccine. I wrote a lot of it in early just to keep track of what was going on and the lies. But I put it aside for a while. I think I wrote on Borrowed Fame, my book about entertainment, during that time. But when my brother died in January 2022, it became personal for me. That's what I started realizing. And I talked to other people there. This was happening to lots of other families. Mm-hmm. So their loved ones were dying because of hospital protocol. They put them in there, and they subject them to remdesivir and ventilators, even though you, in my case, in many other cases, we say, no, absolutely not. And you can't be there in person because they quarantine them. So people die, like my brother did, without us being able to see them.
That's right.
Say goodbye to them. And we can't intervene and see what they're doing. And that there's a reason for doing that. So that really spurred me on and triggered, you know, I've got to finish. dedicated the book to him and all those other people that died because of this, what I call the greatest PSYOP in the history of the world. And it's terrible because for in my family and families like that, most of the rest of people think he died of COVID. They think these people died of COVID and he was unvaccinated. That's why he died. It's my fault, basically, in our family, because he listened to me. But it's terrible because we don't even know what the numbers are there. But even right, so when I decided to write it, it was hard to finally get it to the publisher and say, okay, go with it. And something's happening all the time. Just the other day, China, the fear porn never stops. The latest fear porn is that there's a new deadliest strain of COVID coming out that we could have 65 million cases of it or something. And so in the summer? Again, what does this say about your science? Viral theory is viruses burn out in the summer, but not this one.
Yeah. Always well, you know, you talk about it being a big PSYOP. I've said for the longest time, the only science involved in this is behavioral psychology, you know, because science is about skepticism. If you're going to shut down all skepticism and punish any critics, if you're going to cancel and, purge anybody, and I can't even believe that's something that can be done in America anymore. You know, the fact that you can purge somebody out of their profession because you don't like what they had to say and you don't want to debate them, you just purge them out. I mean, how authoritarian and Marxist is that? But if you're going to be doing that to people, just, you don't get to question the authority. I don't have to show you my data. I don't have to defend this. And there's going to be one and only one treatment. And that's the only thing that's going to be allowed. Well, we know there's no science in that. Absolutely not. And we've seen that game before from the climate people. If you're a denier, you need to be put in jail. If you're a denier, you need to be canceled. And if you're a denier, we've got the science. Science is there. We've got the most number of scientists who say this or that, they claim. But you just do what I say, because we've got the people who have the big degrees who went to the famous universities and they tell you that it's like this, and you're not allowed to question them, and they don't have to give you any answers. You just do what they say and shut up, and I'm not going to show you my data. I've been there. I've been with that for 15 years. That was another big tell.
Yeah, and the language is very telling, because, it started with Holocaust denial, and that was a very troubling term that they made up with, and people were thrown into all over the world for that. And you should be able to question anything. I don't understand that, but they've used that, and that's such an emotional issue. They were successful with that. So they started saying, a climate change denial, election denial, and now COVID denial. So it's basically anything, if you're questioning any of their crimes and cover-ups, they're just going to call you a denier. And how far removed is that from what the Soviets supposedly did? We don't have a Siberia that they're sending us to, but we have FEMA camps. Maybe we'll be there. That's what they did there. Somebody just said, you're mentally ill. I don't think they called them deniers, but maybe they called them party deniers. I don't know. It's a version of that, but that's what they're doing here. I remember the media constantly when they talk about certain candidates are running. He's an election denier.
Yeah.
That's a nonsensical statement. What do you mean election? I don't think he's denying an election took place. they're claiming that fraud existed.
Yeah.
So that's the same
thing. You're denying the government's narrative, right? And the government is God, and we all have faith in our government. I called myself a climate infidel, just so they would understand who I am. I understand you're pushing a religion, and I'm not buying it. I'm an infidel to your climate change or to your COVID stuff as well.
Exactly. Well, we have to question, and you're right. It's about being skeptical, but the people that are our so-called press is only skeptical of us. They're skeptical of the skeptics, but this thing goes away. And as I go down the rabbit holes, and it's so many parallels to Orwell in 1984. And one of the biggest ones is this, I talk about the 1918 flu in there. I don't think we've been told the truth about that. And I quote from an article in there about how, that thing was misrepresented as well, that it may have been the result of a U.S. Army experiment in Kansas, an early vaccine experiment. And the soldiers took it into the trenches with them in World War I. But I had been troubled for a long time when these photographs started appearing of all these masks that were supposedly on 1918. I don't remember. I'm a big student of history, and it used to be conventional history before I started. And I'm a big baseball fan, and especially old baseball. Mm-hmm. And a picture emerged of this guy, supposedly, I didn't even identify him, batter in the 1918 World Series wearing a mask at the plate. I had seen that photograph before in pictures, and the batter was not wearing a mask. And no Major League Baseball player, those were tough guys. Yeah. They would not have worn masks. I thought, sissy, they probably would have tried to beat you up if you suggested it. up. So that's how deep we are. So I think somebody, at least that one picture, had to have been photoshopped. And that's what, how is any different from what Winston Smith's job was at the Ministry of Truth? He had to go back in history and clean things up like that. Now, they didn't talk about it, but that's what he did. Let's put history in accord with the present alleged reality. And that's right.
Well, I guess even from a logical standpoint, one might say, well, if you're telling us that 1918 was the worst pandemic we've ever seen, then I guess the mask didn't work.
But yeah, exactly. If that's the case.
You went with your own narrative there. I went back and I looked at it and I said, okay, so you're saying this is like 1918. I remember going back and looking at the deaths by age groups, right? Mm-hmm. And in 1918, you know, when they had this epidemic, so many people dying, they had people, you had two spikes, those over 80 years old and those under 1 year old, right?
Yes.
And then everybody else is basically the same, every decade. That wasn't what we saw with this stuff coming out of COVID. That was another tell for me. The fact that it went up exponentially with age. I said, that's the actuarial table. They're showing you the actuarial table. This is not a pandemic. This is the actual newsflash. We're more likely to die the older we get.
Exactly.
Well, they ran a pandemic off of that.
One of the first things I wrote about was in April 2020, the CDC issued a directive. Again, this is not a conspiracy theory thing. This is the CDC, one of the producers of this narrative, of this production. Issued a statement, a directive to all hospitals to list the cause of death as COVID-19, even when the patient hadn't been tested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not science. Mm-hmm. It sure looks conspiratorial to me. And when you combine that with the other things, I had Dr. Scott Jensen, one of the many doctors I had on. That's my weekly show. And he was so mad when he got something from the AMA, I think during the summer of 2020, that again said basically the same thing. He said, I've been practicing medicine for 35 years or whatever, and this is ridiculous. You're telling me what I'm supposed to list the cause of death on in patients I haven't even examined or I don't even know about yet. And that's they were doing.
And the families, if the families would go along with it, they had a death benefit if it was COVID-19.
Yes.
But if you didn't go along with it, you wouldn't get that cash. So it's all right, we'll agree to it. And then another big thing that happened was in August, where you had the American Hospital Association go public criticizing CMS, the Medicare, Medicaid people, giving them all this money. And they said, wait a minute, you're saying that you're not going to give us the bonus for finding COVID patients if we don't have the test? You told us at the beginning of this that you didn't have the test and they didn't work anyway. And you're supposed to give us, you told us to do a clinical diagnosis and you'd give us $13,000. Pay up. right there. That's all you need to know. That was August of 2020. They were doing that. August of 20, that was a year before all the stuff about the vaccine mandates and all that kind of stuff were coming out. It's amazing.
Yeah, and we need to not forget, and that's why, I think what distinguishes my book from any book that's been written, and surely any book that will be written probably that is, has any kind of distribution at all, is the fact that I go down these rabbit holes. So I talk about the empty hospitals, talk about the dancing nurses. They're part of this thing, and you can't look at I worked in a hospital for many years when I was young. And it's incomprehensible to me how even in the slowest time period, you would have a bunch of nurses coming up with a choreographed number and dancing in the facility with apparently patients in the background.
I know.
And that's what we saw. And they were not only not questioned, a bunch of them appeared on the Today Show where their Katie Couric types are saying, oh, hi guys. You're basically thinking they were heroes or something. It's like, that doesn't make any sense, especially when you're telling me that your patients are coming out the doors. And I had Jason Goodman, and then later I had Citizen Richard, who was even more extreme about going to these places and filming what was really going on. And he would confront the people inside. He'd start yelling, where are all the COVID patients? Where are they? And they just, of course, call the police and throw them out. But
I remember a video out of Brazil where you had, they had the mask on, and you think it's going to be one of these dancing things. But there's all these nurses around there, and one of them goes over and one by one pulls back all of the curtains and shows that there's not anybody at all on the ward. But the key thing that was amazing about all these dancing videos were how professionally choreographed they were. I mean, they had drone shots. They had precision dancing. I mean, these were not amateur dancers, and they were not amateur photographers and videographers either. This was highly professional. They had dolly shots. Dolly going across, Dolly going in. They had aerial shots with drones and all the rest of the stuff. It was big production values. Don't tell me that these people. And at the same time, at the very beginning of this, the fear was, they said, look at these crowded Chinese hospitals. And I said, I've been in China. Everything is crowded. The Walmart is like that. The train station is like that. The sidewalks are like that. I can certainly imagine the hospitals would be like that. But, you know, you're supposed to believe that there's no room and everybody is filled up. I thought it was amazing that they set up that big tent in New York and they never used it. You know, 2,500-bed hospital that the Army set up, never used
several
it.
Several of them, yes.
Franklin Graham never used it. They just quietly folded up the tent and went away. And it's like, come on, Franklin, why don't you talk about that, you know? And then the hospital ship there in New York City, the hospital ship in California, they took them away because nobody was using them. It's like, why can't people and that was all at the very beginning of this stuff while Trump was still president. And I think that's the key thing. You know, Biden couldn't have gotten away with what Trump did. Hillary couldn't have gotten away with what Trump did. You had to have somebody like Trump who had for years hammered in this persona that he's against the globalist and then join with him.
Right? Absolutely.
That's the
and Trump did. Trump didn't even tweet about anything like that or questioning that because he was questioning. He would usually do that in his tweets. He'd give the perspective that most people think he actually has, which he doesn't. But that's his tweeting personality, which is a lot of times pretty great. But it doesn't translate into policy. But you had again, this is important from the very beginning. You had like for instance in Italy, you had this dishonesty where they had those photo of the coffins. Row of coffins that came out of Italy and, look what's happening there. Well, it was proven, again, not by anybody in the media, online journalists, proved that, this photo is like from 10 years before in another part of the world. It has nothing to do, they didn't apologize. And then you had in New York, they ran a video of a just incredible strained ICU unit. Well, no, actually, that was supposedly from Italy a while back. Mm. They don't apologize. And then I talk about how there was this is why people develop these theories. You not only had the dancing nurses, you said, look very choreographed, almost as if it was some kind of acting. And then you have somebody like Dr. Colleen Smith, who I tried to contact. She actually has an email, of course, not surprising because she didn't answer me. But she did a video which violated all HIPAA regulations, where she went inside an ICU unit and was filming. And basically, she was talking about where are all the ventilators and criticizing Trump. If you remember, we need more ventilators so we can kill people, I guess. And she was constantly talking about that and violating HIPAA regulations, how crazy it was there. If you look into her background, they claim that she was a specialist in medical simulation. What is that? how does that not evoke Sandy Hookish type stuff? Yeah. What is medical simulation? And you're in the middle of this? And so that's the kind of thing in these same hospitals that were the local media and national media would say they're overcrowded. They're overflowing. It's a madhouse there. Jason Goodman, Citizen Richard, people like that, other people would go and film them. It looked like a ghost town. Mm-hmm. And then you had the refrigerated trucks. The fear porn was there. Oh, there's got so many bodies. We have these refrigerated trucks. Again, the citizen journalist.
They were burying people in Central Park, we were told. Why don't we see the graves? Why don't we see the graves? Why don't we, on the anniversary of this, why doesn't Trump and Biden go there to say, this could have been all of you if I had done this stuff? Go to the website, go to the grave sites on Memorial Day and show us where the bodies are buried in Central Park, the mass graves that you had there. Come on. It's so phony. And, one of the things, Don, about this, going back to Trump and the things that he would say, it was a key thing that you see happening from intelligence agencies all the time. You put the truth out there in order to discredit it. So he would say stuff about hydroxychloroquine, and then he would say, and then maybe we can inject, I don't know, it's a HCQ, is that what they call it? And maybe we could inject sunlight into our veins or something like that. I mean, it was such a, he was the setup comedian for Fauci's straight man who could come out and say, Donald, you just don't understand. It's science. You wouldn't understand science. Trust me, everybody. I mean, it was like Abbott and Costello. It was ridiculous what they were doing.
And I go over Trump's entire history here, so people that like Trump are not going to be happy. But again, it sets out Trump was just like in every other arena. He was the designated false opposition.
Yeah.
He was the one who was dubious about it all. He's criticizing Trump, but he's the one who's getting it done because he's president. He's the one signing the orders and everything. And then when he gets, you mentioned hydroxychloroquine, he very notably talked about how he had been taking it and it worked and all that. He got all the people in the alt world, oh, that's cool. So then Trump gets COVID, which I don't for a second believe he had COVID-19. But this big production, he supposedly, oh, see, it happened to Trump, and it wasn't, the lesson was he wasn't wearing his mask. Wasn't taking it seriously. So he goes in there. And so again, the people, I remember hearing, oh yeah, just watch when Trump comes out, I bet you took hydroxychloroquine. So they think he's going to promote that. No, he gets out, he throws him a curveball again. I took Regeneron, you know, which he has financial interest in, along with his buddy, Anthony Fauci. So, and again, he did, I don't think he even had anything, but the entire thing was just one lie upon another. There was nobody really in the place, except for people like us. Mm-hmm. Who were questioning with the platforms we have. No, the RFK Jr. became really good, mostly on the vaccine thing. But even people like that, none of them until what I'm doing here in this book really questioned COVID itself. That's really in the conspiracy world.
And of course, the Republicans all just took a, you know, we're not going to criticize Trump. They just took a dive, you know, in this world, this WWE wrestling thing worldwide.
Yes.
They just take a dive and it's like, I'm not saying anything. About 6 months after he leaves office and, you know, we're looking at the coming mandates from Biden, at that point, you know, they started coming back and they started saying, well, I don't, you know, I've got some questions about this or what, but they would not say anything while it was Trump there. It was that part of it was a real tell as well. But you're right. You know, they were pushing the things that they had, you know, remdesivir, all the rest of this stuff, pushing the ventilator. I remember Peter Navarro just excoriating GM because they didn't shut down their assembly lines and make more ventilators for them quickly enough. Yeah. It was such a clownish thing from the very beginning.
Yeah, there was, and that's the saddest part, is that no, and this is why this is a lot. Anything I talked about, nobody standing up for peace. Very few. I mean, my friend Sydney Sheehan does it. Naomi Wolf, good people on the left, Cynthia McKinney. These are people I'm going to start a leftist political party with one day. The few honest people left, there aren't many of us.
Yeah.
But you know, nobody from the beginning. Tucker Carlson became very good in his coverage later, but he was on board at first. Nobody, except for people like us, nobody questioned this thing. Nobody talked about what was really happening in China. Nobody talked what was really happening in Italy. Nobody talked about the lying numbers, the director of the hospitals, and the other things we saw. I mean, I saw so many of the celebrities that, you know, they were like John Prine, one of my favorite singers. He didn't die of COVID. He had cancer and everything else. And I looked it up and he was admitted to the hospital with COVID-like symptoms, which again, flu-like symptoms, cold symptoms, just replaced the word. But you get to the point where they do things like make up this fear porn. The prisoners at Rikers Island are buried. They've always done that for Potter's Field. That was nothing different at all. But that's the kind of thing they, and it doesn't matter that you have video evidence of a hospital that's empty or and set up that has not had a single patient. You'll talk to disinterested EMT workers and their videos out there that smoking cigarettes and kind of laughing when you mention COVID. Mm-hmm. I think these people did that. These are people right in the middle of the first responders, right? They're in a war zone.
You were talking about Trump and how he allegedly got COVID and all the rest of this stuff. Do you remember? At the very beginning of this stuff, they had CPAC convention. And I think it was like, you know, they kick off the executive order and around March or something like that. And it was in March or April that they had CPAC. And then they said, well, we did a test and there's a couple of people who had tested positive with our PCR test at 40 cycles. And so they were at CPAC. And so now, you know, all of these conservatives are going to die. And they were literally dancing on their graves. And I said, well, we'll see about that. And nothing ever happened. And none of these phony conservatives at CPAC who suck up to Trump ever said anything about the fact that they didn't die. They didn't even get sick. You know, it's that along with all this stuff that was happening in New York and California, you know, the phony hospital stuff and the phony army hospital things and the ships and all the rest of the stuff. And then, of course, you know, there was the Diamond Princess in Japan. And I said, well, this is a good test case. Look at how few people actually got sick and look at how few people actually died. And they were very elderly and they had a lot of comorbidities and it was under harsh conditions. And yet you had this fear porn of this guy said, I was in the heart of the Ebola pandemic and I've never been more afraid than when I was on this ship because it's got such poor isolation things. Everybody is exposed to everything else. It's like, okay. And look at how few people got sick and how few people died. You know, they reported there's something like a dozen people out of 4,000 or 5,000 people. And it was under those harsh conditions that they had for quite a while. And then we saw it happen with a naval ship, where they were all young and fit. Nobody died, but that guy took it to port. You know, and said, "Well, we had a COVID test. I'm going to take the ship to port."
What it winds up doing, and then when you introduce the vaccine part, Trump's still claiming credit for it, even though almost all his supporters are dubious about it.
Yeah.
And you had the death rate. One of the biggest stories in the history of humanity. When the insurance industry starts complaining that the death rate went up 40% in 2021, people in the industry will tell you, if it went up 5%, it would be unprecedented. Yeah. 40% is earth-shattering. It's unexplainable. And even if you take all the phony numbers, the ridiculous contrived COVID numbers, even if you accepted all that nonsense, that all the people falling off roofs and stuff were actually COVID, and which they did put in the number, it still would be a drop in the bucket. It would be a fraction of a 40% death increase. But we know it's there. Dr. Peter McCullough said on my show, there's only one thing that's been introduced. It's different. And that's the vaccine. So now you're left with children with myocarditis, who we never even heard of before. They have little kids. They have crash carts in elementary schools. Parents are being told this is normal. Yeah. Your kid can have a heart attack. Obviously, so it's the lie has transitioned into that. And the people that bought the first lie, even though I know people that have, 8 shots, and they're still getting so-called COVID. And you try to talk to them. If you talk about faith.
Well, it's harder to tell somebody that they've been fooled than it is to fool somebody, isn't it? And that's the old adage. But, when you look at this, it truly is amazing what they have been able to pull on people. And it is truly amazing how difficult it is to pull this thing back. And that's why, the book that you wrote, Masking the Truth, How COVID-19 Destroyed Civil Liberties and Shut Down the World, that's very important. We cannot let them just walk away from what they did. There has to be an understanding of this. There has to be remembrance of what they have done. We need to have a Memorial Day holiday for the people that were just killed in this war that we all just went through. It's a very cynical move for power by every political party, regardless of what their stated philosophy is or who is there. It's one of the most, and of course they're not done. They're going to be ramping this up. And so that's why it's important for us to dismantle this. I think we've got some momentum on our side, but it's something that we've got to double down. People need to educate themselves about it. That's why this book is good. Masking the Truth, Donald Jeffries. Get the information so that you are armed with this. Be skeptical of the government. That is the key thing coming out of all this. Understand they've got a different agenda. They don't think like you. It's hard to think like a psychopath, like a sociopath, like a mass murderer. And that's what these people are. So you got to hold them at arm's length and hold them accountable and know what they did to you. Thank you, Don. It's great talking to you.
Thanks for having me, David. Appreciate it.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.